Sylvia Plath often gets dismissed because of the large portion of her fan base that's comprised of teenage girls. However, today I would like to challenge the brooding radical feminist narrative and hopefully leave you eager to read The Bell Jar. Hello, and welcome to The Zed Files. My name is Nina, and I'm here to talk about history. Not all history, just the history I want. And today, I want to talk about Sylvia Plath. So I'm not going to bore you with a long-ass intro this time. I'm just going to try and jump right into it. However, two things. As you can tell, this episode is shorter than usual. This might be the case for the next few weeks. I have a lot of other work to catch up on, so I won't be able to devote as much time to the podcast. Secondly, this episode will deal with heavy subject matter that could be triggering to some listeners. I will be discussing depressive disorders and suicide. And I recognize the ineffectiveness of me saying this, because the people that need to hear it are likely looking for it. Regardless, if you know that this is you, I strongly encourage you not to listen to today's episode. There will always be next week and all the other weeks. So hopefully now, the only people listening are the ones who will not be triggered by discussion of mental health and suicide, and the rest of us can get started with the story of Sylvia Plath. But to those of you who may not know, who is Sylvia Plath? I'm sure you'll have a better answer to this question by the end of the episode, but because I'm nice, and I don't want you to go in blind, here's what you need to know. Sylvia Plath was a mid-20th century poet, generally considered to be part of the confessional school of poetry. Confessional poetry deals with the I. It's considered personal poetry because it deals with the personal experience, trauma, and psyche. Sylvia Plath herself is one of the most famous examples of such poets. Others include the likes of Robert Lowell and Anne Sexton. Sylvia Plath published two works in her lifetime, a collection of poetry titled The Colossus, and a novel named The Bell Jar, the rest of her works being published posthumously. She garnered herself a reputation for being the favorite of teenage girls. This is because her work often resonates with that demographic. But this reputation sadly turns a lot of people away from reading her work, which is quite disappointing, because her work holds up regardless of your age or gender. But in terms of who is Sylvia Plath, she's a poet. And she was born in 1932 in Boston, to parents Otto Plath and Aurelia Schober. If you've read Sylvia Plath, you likely know of her famous poem, Daddy, which deals with the complicated relationship she has with her father. Otto Plath was a German immigrant who moved to America at the age of 15 in the year 1900. He had a love for entomology and obtained a doctorate degree in biology from Harvard in 1928, and then proceeded to become a popular professor at Boston University, where he taught both German and biology with a focus on apiology, the study of bees, something that would become an important motif in Plath's work. For example, she has a poem titled The Beekeeper's Daughter. Before his second marriage to Aurelia Schober, Plath's mother, he had a short-lived marriage that left him deeply untrusting of women. According to Aurelia, the reason for this was because his first wife had, quote, left him after only 3 weeks for sexual reasons. And this is not relevant, but I think it is funny. Aurelia Schober was a student in Otto Plath's graduate German classes at Boston University. She herself was also of German heritage. This is how they met and started dating. When they did so, Otto Plath was already in his mid-40s. Regardless, the two married in January of 1932 and gave birth to Sylvia in October of that same year. And shortly after, her only brother Warren was born as well. Aurelia had always wanted to be a teacher, which was what she had been pursuing at Boston University. And she was successful in becoming both an English and German teacher at Brookline High School. However, her dream was short-lived, and she quickly gave it up at her husband's request to devote herself to homemaking. Otto Plath died abruptly in 1940, when Sylvia was only 8 years old. The later years of his life were plagued with his ill health and resistance to seeing a doctor. A young Sylvia Plath very much desired the attention of her father. He was an authoritative figure who had been described as an intellectual tyrant. At the ripe age of 5, Plath was reading and writing. She would memorize and write poems to recite to her father and leave poems under his napkin at dinner. His death rocked her world, and was never something she was entirely able to work through. At times, she seemed to praise him and look back on her time with him fondly. Other times, she would write sonnets berating him, describing him as a Nazi. In fact, this was a common motif in her work. She would use Holocaust imagery to depict and construct the character of her father. And although he was by no means a saint, His German origins were about where his similarities to the Nazis end. In fact, he was a committed pacifist who denounced his German citizenship in 1926. Plath's use of Holocaust imagery is one of her most common critiques. Following the death of her father, Aurelia Schober, though, like her father, a controversial figure in Plath's poetry, made many sacrifices. She was financially generous and worked tirelessly to make ends meet. Following his death, the family was forced to move away from where Sylvia was raised, which was near the seashore, which is incredibly vague, but all I was able to find, and back into Boston, where Aurelia took a teaching job at Boston University. Aurelia has been a vilified character both during and after her daughter's life, often painted by Plath as a Medusa-like figure, the source of Plath's overwhelming drive, but also her self-destructive impulses. The New York Times described this relationship as such. Aurelia, the story goes, put so much pressure on her daughter to excel that Sylvia felt the only way to win her mother's love was to outperform herself again and again. Because she could not sustain the cycle, she had no choice but to give up. Sylvia Plath would eventually write to a friend on a Christmas vacation in 1950. I realize now, though, that my mother can't be the refuge that she was before, and that hit me hard. Throughout high school, Sylvia Plath was a very high-achieving student who never lacked ambition. She won many awards throughout school and had her writing published in national publications. For example, in 1950, the summer before Plath was meant to start college, she submitted her short story, And Summer Will Not Come Again, to over 50 publications, before it was accepted by 17 Magazine. But like I said, she was also preparing to go to college. She had packed her bags and was ready to attend Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. But in her undergraduate year, things took a turn for the worst, and Sylvia began to show some symptoms of severe depression, all at a time when her life was really beginning to take off. During her undergraduate year at Smith, she won a Mademoiselle magazine fiction contest, and won herself a prestigious guest editorship at the magazine that coming summer. To a normal person, this would have been an incredible opportunity. But to Sylvia, all it became was a burden as she suffered through college and her internship, unable to enjoy any of it. You might recognize her internship. If it sounds familiar, you might be thinking of The Bell Jar, Sylvia Plath's only published novel, which is essentially a fictionalized version of Sylvia's life. It chronicles a young woman moving to New York to attend an internship, but she finds herself unable to enjoy both the internship and the city of New York as she falls down a depressive spiral. Eventually, her mother finds out and brings her home, to then have a doctor subject her to electric shock therapy. However, this only proceeds to make things worse until her mother notices again, and she is sent to a hospital and is able to fully recover. The details of this book are shockingly similar to Sylvia's life, but this was intentional. She named the book The Bell Jar because she said looking back on her life was like looking through a bell jar. However, in Sylvia's real life, recovery took a bit more time. She muscled through her internship in New York and then moved through another year of college before trying to take her own life in August of 1953, at the age of 20. Plath crawled underneath her mother's house and took her mother's sleeping pills. She later described the experience as, quote, blissfully succumbed to the whirling black that I honestly believed was eternal oblivion. Now, I want to pause for a second, because this is a blatant romanticization of suicide, and I find it to be quite disturbing. I want to acknowledge this, because if I were not to address it, I'm worried about the message it would send. I would once again like to reiterate, if you know this subject matter is difficult for you to deal with and takes a mental toll, please turn this episode off. These themes continue to arise throughout it, and I refuse to be complicit in your own self-harm. Following Plath's suicide attempt, she underwent a period of psychiatric hospitalization, just like in the book The Bell Jar, where she also received electroshock therapy. Plath kept journals from the age of 11 all the way up until the end of her life. And in a journal entry dated June 20th, 1958, she wrote about her mental illness, saying this, "It is as if my life were magically run by two electric currents, joyous positive and despairing negative. Whichever is running at the moment dominates my life, floods it." Although Plath is often thought to have had severe clinical depression, this description sounds a lot like bipolar disorder, previously known as manic depression. Bipolar disorder is a brain disorder that causes changes in a person's mood, energy, and ability to function. People with bipolar disorder experience intense emotional states, swinging between mania, a hyperactive, wildly optimistic state, and an emotional crash, intense periods of depression. Bipolar disorder is a very serious mental illness, for which there was no effective medication during Plath's life. And although this was an incredibly difficult time for Sylvia, she eventually was able to return to Smith and finish her degree. And in 1955, she graduated and received a Fulbright grant to study at Cambridge University in England. Considering Plath's diary entries, it's likely she was suffering from bipolar disorder, which would have plagued her entire life, and would have been something she was unable to medicate. So I'm hesitant to say that she recovered, as I do not believe that was the case. We are very lucky that today we have effective medications for both clinical depression and bipolar disorder. However, like I said, following her graduation, she moved to Cambridge on a scholarship, and it is here where she met her would-be husband, Ted Hughes. Ted Hughes was a poet whose work she admired, and the two met at a party one night on campus. The two shared a mutual interest in astrology and the supernatural, as well as an admiration for each other's work. They married shortly after, on June 16, 1956. In the following year, Plath left Cambridge and moved back to Massachusetts to teach English at Smith College, where she had recently graduated. At this time, she was also studying with a poet named Robert Lowell, a man who's considered to be of the same poetry movement as Sylvia. Confessional poetry, as I described earlier. She did this for about 3 years, from 1957 to 1960, before returning to England to publish her first collection of poems, and the only one published during her lifetime, The Colossus. When she returned to England, she also gave birth to her two children, Frida and Nicholas, in 1960 and 1962, respectively. But in 1962, something happens. Something that will trigger Sylvia Plath's genius, but also her madness. Something that sends her plummeting on a downward spiral. In 1962, Ted Hughes, her then husband, had an affair with Assia Wevel, and so Sylvia and him separated, leaving Sylvia alone in London to take care of their two children. It was famously London's coldest ever winter as well. But this separation triggered a burst of creativity, and now famously, Sylvia spent these years of her life in something like a creative frenzy, writing poem after poem, and although none of them would be published in her lifetime, they all eventually would be, and comprised her famous poetry collection, Ariel. A year later, she published The Bell Jar, under the pseudonym Victoria Lucas. The book was well received, as her writing had been in the past. It was published in London and wouldn't be made widely available for a few years. But shortly after the publication of her book, Sylvia took her own life at the age of 30 in February of 1963. She left no note, just a year's worth of writing. Following her death, her estate passed into the hands of Ted Hughes, who has proven to be a less than ideal person. He has published most of her writings over the years, but is also known to hide and cover up parts of it. For example, he revealed that he had burned Sylvia's journal entry from the day before her suicide to avoid its publication, but Sylvia's death could not undo the growing love both critics and the public felt for her, and she was quickly becoming one of the most influential American poets of all time. Her writing was described by Poetry Magazine as a, quote, pervasive impatience and a positive urgency to the poems. The New York Times praised its relentless honesty, sophistication of use of rhythm, and bitter force. And in 1966, The Bell Jar was republished under her own name. And in 1982, she became the first person to ever win a Nobel Prize posthumously. Her works, The Collected Poems, which had appeared only a year earlier, received the honor. Through the 60 years since her death, many more of her life has been revealed, as her estate continues to publish pieces of her work. Her journals have been published, her letters were published in 2019, which included a candid note to her psychiatrist. I wonder, though, about the ethics of this. Although I'm grateful to have such a window into Sylvia's life, it feels like a huge violation of her privacy, especially when she's dead and has no say whatsoever in what's published and what's kept private. It might be nitpicking, but to me the idea that after my death everything I'd ever written would be published for the whole world to see is kind of not my first choice. With that being said, I probably am still going to read it, but I don't know, it's just something I think about. Sylvia Plath is many things to many people. Depending on your outlook, she's a genius, a feminist, a schizophrenic, a victim, a fraud, but at the end of the day, she's really just a person, and I hope that if you haven't given her a chance, you might now. Before I end this podcast, I quickly want to say one more thing. Depression and mental illness were clearly of high importance in Sylvia's life, but do not get in your head that it played a role in Sylvia's genius. We've heard the story of the tortured genius time and time again, but the narrative it constructs is dangerous, one that dissuades people from seeking help or medication when they need it because they fear the repercussions it might have on their artistry. There is, in fact, a correlation between depression and creative personality types, which is why this phenomenon continues to pop up. But the two things are still independent from one another, and for Sylvia, all her mental illness gave her was a shorter life, while we are left to mourn all the incredible poetry we would have gotten had she survived. If you are struggling, seek help. Your depression and mental well-being does not define you or your artistry. I have put a link to Crisis Resources in the description. For today's episode, I used, once again, a variety of resources, and if you would like my recommendations, there is a good article by the New York Times which is reviewing a biography written about Sylvia Plath, but it offers an interesting perspective and glimpse into Sylvia's earlier life that I found invaluable when writing this. The TED-Ed video called Why You Should Read Sylvia Plath is also good. It talks about the values of her work, motifs she returns to, and it's a good introduction into understanding her poetry style, which I once again found helpful considering I know nothing about poetry. But I also couldn't do a video on Sylvia Plath without recommending you read Sylvia Plath, so I'm currently reading Ariel, which is, you know, it's fine, nothing special. I'm joking, obviously. I would recommend that, and also The Bell Jar, which is meant to be amazing, and I will also definitely be getting to that in time. Thank you so much for listening. I very much appreciate it, and I will likely be back next week, so tune in if you feel like.